Please continue.
But
the, you know, the groups that came to America were spotty. That is, a group come from a certain part of China and succeeded in establishing them here. They bring other groups from the same village, so therefore it's not an even variety of Chinese coming here from different parts of China. They are only from different isolated parts, and particularly South China, and certain clans seem to get more people here, and more people of the clans here brings other more people. It's a, you know, it's a kind of a circle of accumulation, you know? So our people, the low horde, are not too many, you know? So like Chen has a lot here, see?
Did you pay attention to what was going on in the Chinese community while you were here?
To a certain extent, how much of it is intentional, how much of it is unintentional, is hard to say. When you eat in Chinatown, you're...
Did you do a lot of that?
Well, yeah, I buy food in Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
And
did you cook Chinese food?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when it's easy to cook Chinese, cheaper to cook Chinese, I eat rice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, even when I was living by myself among whites, I have a tendency to eat Chinese, and I cook a little bit. So when you go to Chinatown to buy things, when you go to Chinatown to enjoy a feeling of relaxation sometimes,
mm-hmm.
because you don't have to put up with, you know, so-called white culture, you hear a lot of things. So you hear things, you know, it doesn't mean anything to you, but you hear.
Just rumor or gossip.
Yeah, it's part of it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You really realize by now that a good part of human consciousness is not intentional.
Mm-hmm. Did you notice who were the more prominent Chinese?
Oh yeah, you know who the big shots are.
Who?
The Tong leaders and the big fat merchants.
Do you remember their names?
No, I can't remember. Too many? Don't remember. And then just as well forget them, because you remember people like Lincoln or Sun Yat-sen. What do you want to remember? A few gangsters for?
Say a well-known doctor or a well-known judge or something like that.
There were no Chinese judges in those days, and very few Chinese doctors. They come in the 60s and 70s, in your generation.
Mm. Okay. You said that you worked as a seasonal laborer plus odds and other odds and ends.
Yeah.
In those lines of work that you took up, were there any other Chinese?
Few.
Who were they mostly?
No,
your co-workers then?
Mostly Americans.
Whites?
Mostly Americans, Mexicans, a few blacks, you know. But I did not work all the way through. In 1950, after the war was over, a few years afterwards over, I began to go into business with some partners, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I went into business for myself for 14, 12, let's see, no,
what
for about 10
business?
Years. You know. Oh, I went in a partnership with some Americans into a business selling school supplies.
Mm-hmm.
Is that in Chinatown? A great big one called School Days Equipment.
Uh-huh.
Went by one whole block.
In Chinatown?
Yeah, right off of Chinatown.
Which part?
But North Main Street.
Big place. Are you talking about the old...
Old buildings, yeah, right by the railroad track there. The great big site, School Days Equipment Company, school supply.
Uh-huh.
Right. Some American partners, two American partners.
And that's what you did for
10 years, from 1950 to 1960.
But in what prompted you to do these things that were typically non-Chinese? I'm talking about the earlier days now.
Well, when you work for Chinese, you work long hours.
Okay.
When you work for Chinese, you're subject to a lot of pressure. When you work for Chinese, you work for unorganized labor.
Mm.
When you work for Chinese, there are no much advancement in the sense that most of the family businesses and you know, Americans, whatever you say about it, in the era where I lived, there were a lot of opportunities. You're pretty good at something. You become assistant manager or something like that, right? Chinese is tough on other Chinese. The worst thing you can do is work for Chinese sometimes.
I see. And you, while you were working with the these other laborers, did you, you say you tried to organize them, or you were part
of them? No, I was part of the organization. If I see the good organization coming along, I join them. I'm not...
Meaning the early unions?
Yeah, when I was unemployed, I would join the unemployment groups.
Mm.
When I work
in... What do you mean, unemployment groups?
Well, in the old days, during the Depression, people that are starving grouped together in unemployed leagues, you know, clubs.
What do you do?
No,
since you have no money to pay any membership dues and
you don't have that kind of activity. You sit around and study why there's an unemployment. You can say why there's a depression. The answers to things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You study why it's necessary to overthrow the Qing dynasty. I'm just using
mm-hmm.
paraphrasing.
Yeah. I see. So it was those groups were study groups then?
Study and action groups. We sometimes hold demonstrations in front of government warehouses. How come that this country
that
is so rich that people are starving to death?
I see. You felt, or your members of your group felt that it was the government's responsibility.
Oh, government, the system, you know, the system. Chinese don't enter that because Chinese are afraid to enter in American life. You know,
you mean the political system or the economic system?
Economic and political, there's no difference. You're educated in China, you ought to know that.
Mm. Okay. You meant to say that at that time you were a socialist.
No, I was not socialist. We don't have those connotations. America had never had those connotations. America has always been the most richest country in the world. There's no class lines, you know. You see, those words are alien to us. Socialist, communist are alien to us. But if you're unemployed and there's a group in your neighborhood who are fighting for food
mm-hmm.
and so on and so forth, you join a group, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're working in a place and the union said, we form a union together, we get job security and raises, we'll join it. I see the common sense of it, you understand? Most other Chinese don't go in there because first of all, most Chinese feel that they're not fighting against an economic setup, they're fighting against white man, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They can say, oh, we have bad luck because we Chinese are at the bottom of the social ladder, we're not getting our breaks, you know? Whereas I felt a little different. I see look at the Chinese labor and American labor should not kill each other off, but we should cooperate and get a better living for each other, see?
Mm-hmm. In recreation, did you mostly join Chinese or the American side?
Both. I joined Chinese athletic clubs and I joined American groups, you know, as a matter of fact, I worked for the Los Angeles County Playground Department one time as
mm-hmm.
an athletic director.
Mm. Did you learn to play mahjong? Do you enjoy Chinese opera?
I knew how to play mahjong for about several years. I played it, and then I realized what a tremendous waste of time it was.
Mm-hmm. I see. So later on, you tended to take on more what is called Western.
Yeah, I went through it. A period of life I went through that. I learned to play poker, learned to bet on race horses.
Gambling.
Gambling. Every Chinese went through gambling. I gambled. But I gradually realized that those things, the percentages are against me, so I don't like to put percentages against me.
Did you ever go to the illegal gambling halls in Chinatown?
Not only gambling, my uncle was a principal in a gambling setup one time in Oakland,
mm-hmm.
and I used to help in driving a gambling car back and forth from Oakland to the county line, and I was once a bodyguard for a group of gamblers when I was about 18 years old.
Oh. Did you do the same things here?
No, when I got down here, I got away from a lot of illegality. Because you must remember, illegality among the Chinese is very legal.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, in other words, it's no more. It's cold. Let me turn the heat for you. Chinese regard gambling as part of their livelihood. Do you understand?
Would you say that gambling was the favorite pastime of the Chinese back in those days?
To a certain extent, yes. Not because it's a pastime, because it was one of the few roads that the Chinese can have a hope of getting out of his miserable conditions.
Elaborate.
All right. Take for instance, if you're very poor, your chance of going up the social ladder, economic ladder, is very limited. Understand? Education and influence of friends and social classes that you're used to have friends that will bring you together in partnership, you know, it's very difficult. So the only chances they'll have, let us say, in a lottery, all of a sudden you put in $5, you might win 10,000, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Or else you might double, triple, three, four times your money in gambling.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is the only chance you ever hope to get out of the misery that you're in. Suppose you do have, let's say, I get paid $15 wages at the end of the week,
mm-hmm.
and I may put away $5 for gambling, I use the other $5 to survive.
Mm-hmm.
All right, whether I lose the $5 or win the $5 is not that great,
mm-hmm.
because I would eat a little better if I had the $5, I eat a little poorer if I less did not have the $5.
Mm-hmm.
But that $5 put in a lottery might all of a sudden out of nowhere might bring me in, you know, $10,000. Just like right now in Hollywood Park on the racetrack, for $2 you can buy a ticket that the other day somebody won $300,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are what really impels people to gamble, you know. The rich...
Therefore the rich do not gamble.
The rich gambles. But they go to, let us say, Monte Carlo,
mm-hmm.
Hong Kong, as a social fun.
Mm-hmm.
They like to win, you know, but it's kind of social fun too.
Mm-hmm.
But when a poor gambles, it's a different psychology. It's kind of a hope. But you gamble on a small level, it's because of the way of passing the time. So you're right. It's both a pastime and it's a fight against destiny.
Did you do it? Did you gamble?
I gamble, but not a great deal. I gamble
as a pastime.
Well, no, as a racetrack. I never gambled too much. After the first 2 years playing a little mahjong, kind, I realized how much time the Chinese lose in playing mahjong all night long, and you know,
mm-hmm.
and small talk. I hate that.
Mm-hmm.
Always have hate that. But I did go to the racetracks and gamble. You know.
Yeah, all throughout your life.
Even now, once in a while, I have a chance to go to the shop. That's better for the dog than the, you know, it's the...
Recreation, then.
I think semantics, that's all. It's not recreation, truly. It's a way of a man fighting against certain fate. I got something. I make a decision. I put this over here. And my character arises whether I win or lose. You know, when I win, there's a little pleasure. When I lose, I can take out with us. Take it with something. It is the macho theory of living.
I see.
Women do not have to go through this.
Oh, there must have been women gamblers. Not Chinese women, because they were trained.
But they gamble on a different basis. They holler about their losses, they talk to the relative. The theory of men learn to say, here's a throw of a card. $500 go on the turn of this card here.
Uh-huh.
And you learn to, it's an artificial cultural thing also. The ability to think that's manhood.
Mm-hmm.
So much myth that we grow up in. All right.
I see. But would you say most of the Chinese, what do they do with their money? Besides gambling, or rather, perhaps other than gambling?
Most Chinese are industrious because coming from a economy of scarcity, you learn to accumulate and hold on to your money only by, as a survival, not with the idea of maybe even to as a stake for a business, but as a survival item that you may have hit upon a bad time, huh?
So did the Chinese mostly save their money and just put it in the bank, right?
Yeah, put it away somewhere, you know. If they can, if they have any money. Don't forget, the Chinese margin is small. Now,
the
gradually,
Chinese
as time...
Margin?
Margin of, you know, in the early days, you have to talk in terms of evolutionary situation. As time goes on, the Second World War, the opportunities given to the Chinese are greater. The Chinese expansion of their own capital, hoarding is greater, and gradually, due to the Chinese hard-working temperament, and the business acumen, they begin to also prosper, and time, like Chinese anywhere, like any people who has gone through a lot of communal suffering, or what they call suffering, they tend to be much more cautious with the money and tend to know how to make the money work for them,
Yeah.
The Chinese business acumen,
And
so in time, the Chinese have more money or more surplus value, you want to call it that.
Would you say most Chinese lived pretty close to each other?
Most Chinese live in contact with each other. That is by phone or, go across the city,
In those days?
Because social life is based upon a great deal on the family circle, extended family circle.
Yeah. I presume you're talking about in America, right?
In America, yeah.
Do you feel that the Chinese, for instance, would put an extra effort to locate a place to live which is close to other Chinese?
This is universal. The Mexicans do it because they want to buy food and it's comfortable to talk to other Mexicans. Blacks do it. Particularly those groups that are discriminated against. They feel safer.
What was an average income in the pre-World War period?
Pre-war period, I would say you make $100 a month if you're all right.
Okay. You have never really tried to live among the Chinese, right?
I have.
I mean, not after.
You mean consciously?
Yeah.
Or preferences. I live among Chinese because I'm in Chinatown enough of the time, but I never able to find an apartment or anything like that here. You see. Although when I was in the Bay Area and Oakland, before I left for Los Angeles, I did live among Chinese all the time, in my youth.
Yes, in your youth, and after you...
After, it's in no place. Chinatown is a very close place. You can't find any place to live down there. It's all merchants.
Have you looked, or did you just never bother
to
try?
I go economically, Also, there's no place to park your car and stuff like that. It's probably right in one sense. Unconsciously, I live where I don't have to be account to my possible relatives or Chinese public opinion. Americans don't give a damn for you, but Chinese has a public opinion.
And you don't like that.
Neither do you.
Do you know any Chinese who are involved in politics in China?
Know anybody involved in politics in China?
Yeah.
Tell me, what do you mean by that?
For instance, during the anti-Japanese war effort, do you know of any Chinese in Chinatown who were active in the cause?
You're talking about me?
Yes.
I was the president of the Chinese Federation of Clubs.
What's that?
There was a group of about 20 clubs that were banded together, young people, to help out China in the war against Japan.
Financially?
Everything. We sent ambulance, we sent medicine to China, we sent money to China, and I have citations from the Chinese government so forth. How did I come about? I was a laborer, but I attended a great big meeting called together at the time the war first broke out, and everybody was allowed to speak. And I was representing Venice and Santa Monica. I think each community sent delegates, and there was 60, 70 people in the Bay Area. They sent me up there because they don't want to go up there. So I was a delegate. There were thousands of people in a great big auditorium from all United States. So when I was delegate, I talked, and because on the basis of my talk, they acclaimed me chairman. by acclamation. So I was forced
Which
to come along.
Which year was that?
1937,
mm-hmm.
the year that Japan attacked Shanghai.
I see. Did you feel outraged about it? About the Japanese attack?
I wouldn't give it to emotion. I just feel that it was a situation where Japan was threatening the world. Today is Shanghai. When they conquered China, they will conquer next the West, you know,
mm-hmm.
bit by bit. And I realized China was being subjected.
Mm-hmm.
So I have understood all what's going on for a long time. As a matter of fact, in 1971, I think, no, 1931, I had already part of a student awareness. Student group protesting the Japanese taking over of Manchuria, Manchukuo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Always, see, there are small student groups there. I'm unusual in one respect. Very few Chinese Americans are interested
mm-hmm.
in China politics.
Mm-hmm.
I told you before, I learned to think for myself when I was very young.
Mm-hmm.
And I took part in all my other friends who are in the student movement
mm-hmm.
came from China. Lao Hoksang, you know?
Mm-hmm, right. Oh. Did you feel that what you did was a patriotic move?
I don't think it was a patriotic move in the sense that my great love for China, I felt that it was necessary on the basis of warmer world morality, that Japan was a fascist
mm-hmm.
nation and it was going to destroy the weaker people in China. It was
mm-hmm.
my ancestral land. I felt that indignant, but I felt just as bad against Nazi Germany too,
mm-hmm.
you know.
But you didn't take part in any activities demonstrating against or working against
Germany?
Nazi Germany.
Other than the Nuremberg
Pact's
axis were all combined, you know, Germany was allied with Japan,
mm-hmm.
allied with Italy, called the Rome Berlin Tokyo Axis.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, we Chinese allied with many of the American anti-fascist movements.
Mm-hmm.
So we took part. Now, I do not know, can't tell you what percent of my time, I just tell you I remember I did take part in it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I did take part in joining with some Chinese, Ma Hok Sang, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that they were the leaders of many of the movement. I became chairman, and I got some documents, someday you would see, I didn't
mm-hmm.
know that you were interested, someday I would show you some documents from that
mm-hmm.
period, newspapers from that period,
okay.
where I took a very... active role.
Your involvement with the Chinese Federation of Clubs, how long did it last?
3 years.
You were always the president.
I was 2 years the chairman, and then somebody else succeeded me.
Okay. Did you cooperate with, say, the Chinese Relief
Relief Committee. As a matter of fact, I have a commendation from them. We sent ambulance and medical supplies.
How did you send, quote-unquote, these things? You shipped them, or you...
Some of them through general organizations that were nationwide, from New York and others, you know what I mean? And others we sent through special channels through to other parts of China where, see, there are different organizations. Some organizations were interested in helping the guerrilla warfare, you know, helping...
But you said, when you said... sending ambulance. Did you physically buy an ambulance?
No, there was national groups, take for instance China Aid Council,
okay.
the headquarters in New York. We gather money and we send to them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And they buy it and ship it to Europe, see?
Ship it to Europe? And how did it get to China?
I don't know. I think they sent through the Trans-Siberian Railroad, I think. We never did find out exactly what happened. You know, but we didn't
mm-hmm.
know that we were part of a national drive, you know.
But
we also did something else. We hold demonstrations against shipping of American supplies to Japan.
Mm-hmm.
In those days, scrap iron and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, I was one of the group leaders that had a demonstration of 20,000 people on the dock of Los Angeles Harbor protesting forming picket lines against ship carrying iron to Japan. American
mm-hmm.
iron to Japan. See, those were great days. Nothing like three days. Yeah. Terrible.
And then what happened in Well, 19, then you, there were still a lot of activities in, even in 1940, 41, 40.
Yeah, naturally, because we, in those days, then it became official. But you remember that 1937, 38, 39, America was not in the war.
Mm-hmm.
Now, America was undecided which side she's on.
Well,
on the one hand, she's against Japan. On the other hand, there's many Germans here who would like to have her, us on the side of neutrality.
Mm-hmm. I see. While you were working, or rather participating in this anti-Japanese movement, were you working?
Oh, naturally, I had to keep living.
Yeah, that's when you were traveling from place to place?
No,
or?
I just stayed in Los Angeles doing all kinds of work.
Uh-huh.
Nobody really, like anybody else was working.
At that time, I see, you were not married until 1940. And in other words, when you got married in 1940, did your wife become also involved in the similar kinds of political activities?
To a minor extent only, to a minor extent, because she was not in the Chinese community, she's
mm-hmm.
Korean, But they were all fighting together in the anti-Japanese movement, not necessarily on the same circles, Because every Oriental person here outside the Japanese, and there are many Japanese who fought against their own government's imperialistic policies.
Mm-hmm.
It was very different type of generation than it is now.
When you got married to this Japanese, Korean American woman, the opposition, how strong would you say the opposition was? Or did you experience any kind of opposition either from her side or your side of the family?
Both sides, Not opposition, but discomfort.
I see.
Well, I can't talk to the old folks. She can't talk to my old folks. Or whatever, the language difficulties. And the cultural difficulties. No group that is being persecuted or discriminated against, no group like to have its fundamental core strength disperse.
Mm-hmm. I see. And so that is what they interpreted your act to be.
Not hostile actions to say that this
no,
is
they
always
they were going away from.
Yeah, that's why they dispersed the center.
Mm-hmm.
But they felt, in some way, they felt it's inevitable, it's an American thing.
At that time, you said interracial marriages were just beginning to
happen. Yeah,
just
beginning, yeah.
Did you?
They were individuals before that, but I mean, as a beginning, as a
as
acceptable
a
thing, yeah.
Phenomenon.
Yeah.
Did you know of anyone else who also?
No, there are quite a number.
Married other Chinese?
Beginning of lots of at that time.
Your friends, maybe?
Yeah, there were several friends at that time.
But
several
what
members.
Kind of people did they tend to marry? In other words, Caucasians or Asian Americans or what?
Yeah, they sometimes married into Japanese,
Uh-huh.
And they sometimes married into Caucasians, Now take for instance my generation. That means my sister
mm-hmm.
and etc. Their generation and back home, none of them intermarried. None of them divorced. I think
mm-hmm.
my sister and my brother-in-law's family's five or six girls, every one of them have a marriage that lasts 30, 40 years. And none of them divorced, none of them married outside.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are partly oblivious what's happening anywhere else. They form their own family circle. They're very comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
They go to each other's home. They buy a wonderful home. And they you stay in one part long enough, you begin to be prosperous. A grocery becomes a market becomes a supermarket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, laundry becomes a chain of laundry. You prosper, person, you become a half millionaire, and you have to own the circles. Not my joke. It's like China. Well, yeah, it's life you see in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
There's no social conscience of any kind, and they think the people like me is a freak.